Cosana, Cosana.
General manager. No, I'm very appreciative as chair here, and I think the committee are, that we believe the right people are here who know what they're talking about, who can respond effectively. All right, so someone will give the presentation in whatever manner it is that you wish to, but when you respond, you can see you can refer responses to others. Is that in order, Mr. Joubert? Right. Do go ahead.
Mr. Thomas.
Oh, Mr. Thomas. My apologies.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for the opportunity to come and present to the committee and the committee members again. The presentation we've prepared was based on the knowledge that we had of what was going to be discussed in the meeting, not in terms of some of the details, but what we will do is we will try and address some of the areas that have been raised by these companies and provide answers to the committee members in that regard. The format of our presentation, we're going to try and keep it as brief as possible, yes, is we're just going to talk to you how does Transnet respond to the policy perspectives, what are the various policies and procedures and mechanisms we've put in place, as well as our performance against these. Then we're going to talk to some specific areas regarding the 1064 program as well as the rolling stock programs. So just briefly, the national challenges that we have is unemployment, inequality, skill shortages, growing population, limited industrial capacity, and a reliance on resource export. So the national agenda that the government has put together is we need to focus on job creation, skills development, normalizing society and economy, local procurement and economic growth, and infrastructure development. Government has responded to this, putting in various policies and procedures, for example, CSPP, the Black Industrialist Policies, etc. Transnet has basically taken all of these policies and worked it into our processes under supply development and competitive supply development programs, as well as under the Black Industrialist Programs, as well as in our enterprise and supply development. How do we create the future of the company by growing our small local companies? So in terms of the CSDP program was started under the DPE, and Transnet took that and grew it further in terms of our integrated supply development approach to this, alongside with existing BBBEE, NGP and NDP policies, as well as now the incorporation of the Black Industrialist Policy. And we're obviously focusing on skills development, job creation and preservation, intellectual property transfer, and also the localization of suppliers and ultimately industrialization through our supply development program. Since the inception of this program, Transnet has contracts worth 134 billion rand where we do have supply development obligations against them. Of this 134 billion rands worth of contract value, 62.5 billion rand of supply development value has been contracted with these suppliers, which represents about 47% of the contract values. To date, 30.6 billion rand, or 49% of these obligations, have been delivered. So we track and monitor the supply development obligations as they come through on the contracts. And obviously we still have many contracts that are still open and are being delivered through which the supply development value will be concluded. The supply development value on this is focused against various pillars. Pillars, for example, localization, industrialization, investment in plant, technology and IP transfer, job creation, small business development. And as you can see, one of the largest areas is around localization, where supply development value obligations of 30.8 billion rand has been committed. Another one of the facets that Transnet focuses on is through preferential procurement. To utilize our procurement spend and use the BBBEE codes and the legislation around that to deliver transformation, empowerment transformation, and sustainable economic growth. So if we have a look at the year-to-date, the financial year-to-date currently of Transnet, we have total measured procurement spend of 30.8 billion rand. And of that spend, 11.3 billion rand has been spent on black-owned entities. 4.4 billion has been spent on black women-owned entities. 2.4 billion has been spent on exempted micro-enterprises, and 2.5 billion rand on small qualifying enterprises. So through the implementation of our various policies and procedures, supply development, preferential procurement, we can see the trending growth of the impact Transnet spend is having. And as you can see on the slide, you can actually see the incremental growth of Transnet's spend impact over a five-year period, where you can actually see the growth in terms of what is being achieved. Now, one of the other areas that we also focus on is our enterprise and supply development initiatives. And this is basically to unlock value and create capacity within small enterprises, within local enterprises in the South African economy. We develop them, we give them the skills to be able to understand what it is they need to do to become businessmen or women, as well as help assisting them with their compliance, also assisting them with funding where required, also looking at areas of improving productivity, working with Productivity SA, working with SABS in terms of design and innovation. And as you can see, our initiatives are spread across the country, where we focus on where certain needs are and where we can create capacity and access for these small entities in the country. I'm just going to give two examples of initiatives that we are running, especially with a focus on small entities and especially school learners in terms of entrepreneurship. How do they need to grow to become entrepreneurs, to be able to enter into the South African economy? How do they work in terms of design? How do they take the ideas and convert the ideas into marketable products? So the first area is obviously the Transnet Enterprise Development Hub, which assists them in terms of how do they set up their businesses, how do they get access to funding, working with CEDA, working with the National Youth Development Agency, also working with the company registrar where required, working with SARS, assisting them with those processes, also assisting them with training, providing them with business toolkits, etc. And we have hubs in Gauteng, we've got hubs in Eastern Cape, Western Cape, and also we are busy finalizing the hub in Limpopo. We obviously got further implementation plans to bring more hubs into the regions. And we have success stories, small IT enterprises that have came in and went through these processes. And one of them is actually providing services into Transnet as a subcontractor to one of our larger IT service providers. So we're seeing the benefits coming through to these small enterprises to become meaningful participants in the South African economy. One of the other areas that we're also looking at is one of the initiatives around entrepreneurship and design innovation is the Transnet Matafatso Center working with WITS. And this is where we are looking at developmental activities of how do we get these individuals to take an idea and get it past the prototyping phase and marketing and selling. So this is a new initiative we are running to help develop these small local entities to actually come up with new ideas, come up with the new technology disruptors for the economies. One of our other areas that we've done is our Transnet Moving Ideas project. We're trying to take entrants, come up with the ideas and see how business competitive they are and where they are going
Just a minute. Honourable Mantash.
Sorry, Chair, the presenter is talking above our heads. We don't have what she is presenting. It's not the same thing that is
presenting. Here to have the same presentation. That's why I was now trying to get this to work. because somebody, I don't know who the young lady is in the black dress there, was obscuring my view on the overhead. So I couldn't see, because I can't see through you.
Chair, I'll refer to the pages on the presentation.
You see, we're following this.
It should be exactly the same thing.
All right, can we, just a minute.
Okay.
Let's just have 1 minute here. Staff, where apparently you were census. Can you find out who sent what and get us the right one? This is the one you sent. The only thing we got was the map.
Okay.
And thereafter, we've been looking.
Yes, yeah, this was in the presentation.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
So we won't debate that, because there's a certain reality here. And that reality is I've got a blank screen, and I have to now try and remember figures and all kinds of things that you're listening to me, which makes it very difficult. Does anyone as a member have the right one? So perhaps we should take the next one, because, you know, we can't follow you.
Yes.
So have we got, who have we got here, Prasa? Do we have the correct Prasa one? While we get your stick and we get what you're referring to, unfortunately, Mr. Thomas, we don't have it. We don't want to waste time. We've just made up time, and we don't want to waste time. All right, staff? Just get a stick of this current presentation of Transnet. Get a stick. And let us try and get that done. And then Prasa, where are you? Who's making the Prasa presentation? Just change seats, I think, so that you're right at hand here. And let's do Prasa and hope we've got the right presentation there. Prasa? Are we going to be on track here with Prasa? Have you got the... Are you making photos of that? Go ahead. Well, I don't actually administer that, but we can check with Mr. Herman. Are you all right? Just page through to page 12 and let's have a look. Slide 12. Let's just quickly see so that we don't have a similar issue. Slide 12. That's right. Okay, let's move. Okay, have you got it there, Mr. Stock and DDG? Have you got it? Yeah, good. Okay, let's go. Right, go ahead then and... we're looking at Prasa here. Is that Mr. Zede, Group Chief Executive Officer? Or is it Mr. Sabola?
It's Mr. Sabola.
Right.
Zede on my right.
No, go ahead.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And thanks very much to the members. We have prepared a presentation with the view that we understood what was required of us, and of course as we go along, the issues that were raised by the companies earlier on, we will obviously address those as we are proceeding as well. Now I want to just emphasize that we were here in August last year. Of course we shared our views around certain matters on how we can actually deal with this issue of localization going forward, because it's not so much very it's a fairly complicated thing, by the way, when you get deeper into it, and we shared our views, and I think if we can get some of those building blocks, I'm sure the country will obviously move forward in a very thinking way. So this morning we'll share with you what actually drives us from a Prasa perspective in terms of our own investment and some of the key economic development obligations that we do have within our contract that we've signed, and of course what will drive those through the the development of the factory that we are busy with, and unfortunately the committee did visit and wanted to go to the site, and because of the commotion that was happening in that part of town, it was advisable that the committee shouldn't go there. I'm sure, but there will be time to do so. And of course, some of the constraints from where we sit as the operators or state-owned entities, what we pick up as constraint, because to some extent we are still also very much constrained as we're pursuing these developmental goals as well. And of course, what we still see as potential solution to address some of these issues that we are obviously facing with going forward. And there's two or so slides that I think are worth repeating to what I said in August last year, just to re-emphasize the point, because I don't want us to lose some of those key pointers. From a PRASA perspective, we're driven by these two investments, and the first investment is the what we call the existing fleet, is the yellow and grey trains that obviously are the majority right now. Now, in that particular program, we have about 4,600 of those vehicles, but of course we operate about 2,900 of those every single time. Some of these vehicles are obviously not going to come back. It's a fairly old fleet, but we're spending about 2 billion rand a year at least on those vehicles just to rehabilitate them and to keep them going until such time that we have a new fleet that comes through. On the right side, of course, we have this new investment, which is driven by the 59 billion worth. And when we drive those key seven principles of transformation, and we'll share with you on what progress we've actually made thus far on that particular program as well. Now, when we take the first program, which is the general overhaul of the existing fleet, you can see that every single year we're trying to take about 500 vehicles out for rehabilitation, and that work is actually undertaken by South African companies. There's about seven of those companies that undertake that sort of work on behalf of PRASA. So we don't do that work as PRASA. So we have Transnet, which is it's actually Transnet that does that work. It's Naledi Rail that does that work. It's Victra Holdings that does that work. CTE that does that work. And, of course, Goldex and Railway Repairs that does that work. And, of course, lastly, UCW, which is now known as Alstom Obunye because of the acquisition that was done by Alstom, I think, in the past 2 years or so. So we have these seven companies, and since about 2000, basically, we started with about four companies where every year they will know the number of vehicles that goes to the facilities for the vehicles to be rehabilitated. Today, we have increased that number to about seven, and obviously, we are quite comfortable that they've undertaken this work in the most difficult time. And if you look at the numbers going forward, is that we are looking at sustaining this particular program at least at a minimum for about 10 years without retiring these yellow and grey trains. We still have them running, but of course the graph is going to turn, especially as the new trains are obviously coming through. And we have already started to share that information with the current companies to say the program itself will have to be phased out as more of these new trains are obviously coming through. And it's a very simple thing. Because these vehicles are about 55 years old. So you know, you put it in a workshop for 3 months, it comes back, you hit it for 3 days, it says no, I need to go back to the workshop. So, value for money, we have realized that value for money is actually diminished over time. So the idea, though, now is that how do we then migrate these companies, which are South African companies, to then participate in the new, so that you don't create a new investment portfolio, but then you kill the older investment portfolio. That, you know, that's our idea, is that how we then migrate them. So that discussion is currently underway, but it shows that in the next 10 years at least there is a business with a minimum of 500 vehicles that will be undertaken by South African companies. Now, while I'm on this point, let me also deal with what Honorable Ngongi did raise earlier on. where he asked why is it that, you know, we also on these maintenance activities we prefer to do sometimes the direct and not direct and in that sort of a scenario. The point with it is that when we take out a vehicle out to strip it out, there's quite a number of subcomponents that comes with it, whether it's the painting work that needs to be undertaken on it, the traction motor that needs to be replaced, the pantograph that needs to be replaced, there's a wheel and all of that. The last thing you want is, as well as a state-owned entity is to manage hundreds of multiple contracts at the go. You want to almost want to manage one that you can also account for all these obligations so that you take the vehicle out and say, if I'm giving to you Transnet to go and rehabilitate this particular vehicle, it's the responsibility of Transnet, of course, to go and say who's got the pantograph, who's got the wheel, and all of that. At least from a PRASA perspective, from a contract management, it's easier in that scenario where you are managing one company who then can, in their own working, they can manage multiple of companies. That's why you sometimes see us going for one company who then manage about 3-4 guys to supply different components. We also do have, and especially when coming to what we call mission critical components, where we manage them directly. We buy like traction motors directly to those that are supplying to us as well. So it's not always, it's not a standard where you like do it standard, but there are some cases where you contract to one. There are some cases where you contract directly to those that have the duty to rehabilitate the vehicle. And it's also in this slide where I also need to address what Unique Engineering raised earlier around, let me pick up that point. No, the paragraph. But maybe I'll come back to this point of Unique Engineering in my notes. Now, I spoke about that the value add, of course, is we're starting to see that obvious diminishing in this particular program. I'm not going to spend time. Now,
we do want you to be addressing the issues here. You see, of course, we understand about the coaches and the vehicles and the heavy maintenance costs, but try and direct everything to what we are doing this morning.
Correct. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Now, the second investment that we undertake, which is basically the new, and I will say this is the future actually, by all means. Now, when we were here in August last year, we did raise that we have now contracted, obviously, which is Kibela, with a very stringent obligation because of the. Also because of, at the time, around 2012, we had the designation that was obviously out. So when we went back to the market at the time in 2011, the designation, we did use the designation to make sure that all those obligations of localizing these elements are obviously factored into the procurement document. It's now obviously known that we have this contract which is worth 59 billion rand accompanied by a maintenance contract of 18 years. Now, the issue is, are we making progress? Are we not making progress? And what are the dynamics that comes with it as well? But I thought I should start with this slide because this is what is contractually Kibela is obligated to adhere to. And you can see with this slide, there's quite a number of local content that ought to be adhered to, and quite a high level of those, by the way. I mean, some are reaching 100%, 65%, which is the minimum that ought to be reached. So you'll have this thing in the contract, obligated. The issue is now how well or how badly we are we doing. Are we getting South African companies to come in, and we, in which sort of areas are they coming into to manage on these different components as well? I'll pass this because just give a sense. But I think I may, let me just use this slide so that later on when I give a context, at least there's an understanding. We have these 600 trains that we need to manufacture for 10 years. The reality is that out of the 600, 20 of them are coming from Brazil, so they are imported. And when one was here in August last year, I explained the rationale behind the 20, and it was because you have a factory that is yet to be developed, and the issue was that do you then wait for the factory that to be developed and wait for the first train, which will then come in 2018, or do you want to have start having the trains at least start coming through now, but also allow an opportunity to start training South African engineers to for the manufacturing activities, which we believe is something that worked and it works better because we have in these modern train sets that are already running as we speak. There's about, I already accepted about 9 of them, but we have about 15 of them in the country already, with actually about 19 of those that are actually reaching about provisional acceptance as we speak. So we have started seeing that. Now, that also allowed us an opportunity to train about 120 of South African engineers, which even though we haven't started the local production, we have seen South African engineers that have been trained now to have the design capability of the train. We're going to see the effect of that when we start with the manufacturing of what we typically call a business express type of a train, which is the second package of this train. Those trains will have to come to play in the next 2.5 years. Those trains will be manufactured, will be designed by South African engineers that have been trained for the last 3 years since we signed the contract with Givela in this instance. So that 20 was about to achieve that particular objective. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, that's what we are basically supposed to see. The structure actually is in the picture, doesn't really do justice because the construction of the factory itself is quite advanced. We lost a bit of obviously of production in the first week, the first part of January, but now construction activities are proceeding again with the view that by the obvious the second quarter we should have the factory that open its doors to start manufacturing activities. So from a profit perspective, we are still talking in a context where local production hasn't really started as yet. So the company that we have signed a deal with is not yet, the obligation having yet kicked in, but I will share with you some of the progress. Even though those activities haven't kicked in yet, we are seeing some of the positives that comes with it as well. Now, most importantly, adjacent to this factory, we then took a view that we ought to have a supplier base just next to it, just to make sure that you leverage on the same infrastructure, you lower the cost of doing business as well. So there is a space where we are, the first phase of the supply park is about 20 hectares of land that we're developing. There is about, in principle, about 7 companies that have already demonstrated to place their activities there. Because you don't want a situation where people are saying, I'm a supplier A, I'm coming from, we then said, well, in terms of our localization objectives, not only we want you to place your activities in the country, but we want you to place them where the manufacturing activities are actually happening. So those construction activities of this one will start now in April, and of course with the view that we'll then have a full-fledged supply park by later this year. It will start opening its doors as well to supplement the activities there. Now, even though it was not a contractual obligation per se on those 20 trains for Givela to give us localization because those are in the main imported trains. The good thing though is that we started seeing South African companies themselves having taken material out of the country
for the train that we are operating now. And you have seen, and this slide shows all the companies that are South African, like your Max Steel. I mean, this train, for instance, the steel that is used there, the whole stainless steel, 100% of it is actually coming from South Africa, even though the train is coming from Brazil. So it has used the South African material for that matter. So you can see that you have your Max Steel, your Ridel, the batteries are coming from the country, the doors are coming from the country, the luggage racks are coming from the country, and the list will obviously will increase as we go along. I'm just talking to just the first phase of this particular contract, and just purely on the 20 trains. As well, and you can see on the right what we try to show is that what is the percentage of those components in terms of the train price, and just to show, and we're trying to also start putting in the volumes of those things that we're talking about as well, just to give you a sense of the magnitude on this first delivery. So we're starting to see some picture of localization coming, really emerging quite significantly. As well, and more will come, especially once the local activities are actually starting, because here I'm just reflecting on the foreign activities but using South African materials to come through as well. These are more other companies like your Dinels as well, your Laser Junction, your Boyco, and so on. So the list is quite, I think there's about 32 odd companies, South African companies, that have already been contracted, even though local activities haven't yet started in this instance. I also wanted...
You're addressing that, you know, those what do you call these?
Pantographs.
Yes, I will. I've yet to see one myself. But those pantographs have come up quite a few times.
Yes.
In doing that, please also address your quote system, which seems to be different when it comes to pantographs. You have one quoting system, it would appear, for other products and manufactured things,
yeah.
But when it comes to pantographs, you have a very unique process quotation system.
Correct. In fact, this will be the right moment to deal with that issue. In fact, that's what I was trying to pick up on unique engineering. Let me just deal with that and in two fronts. The code system that PRASA introduced, and it's about 3 or 4 years ago. It is on the what we call in the yellow and gray trains. Now, that system doesn't work, literally. We have changed it. So and the school of thought 3 years ago and 4 years ago, people then thought that, well, if Sevola gotten a contract today, and then he has given you, say, 10 pantographs, the next time you issue another one, it can't be Sevola, it must be most probably Zide, right? Sort of you like saying, well, there must be as many people that got to benefit out of that. Now, the aftermath of that particular way of strategy is that if Sevola has given you this work, and then in a year's time, he doesn't have the work, unfortunately, he has to shut down. So Zide will try for a year, and after a year, Zide will have to go down, Sevola comes, and so on. We have done away with that code system. In fact, we've now issued a tender. It's under evaluation with the view that we'll contract for 3 years and sustain it exactly like what we did with the seven on the refurbishment program, because there you give people long-term certainty, which I've always been an advocate for, to then say give people a long-term investment certainty so that they can invest as well and improve in terms of their tooling and whatever the case might be, increase their capacity as well. But if you then keep on contracting them on an emergency three-code system, I need 30 pantographs, and then after a while you then close shop, it doesn't work. It becomes sort of a stop and go. So we've done away with that, and in response to a unique engineering which they've raised in the paper. I see. It's on page 18 and 19. Now, so that is out of the way. I'm also encouraged with what I've seen in on page 18 as well, where they specifically they are dealing with the issue of that when they were at the earlier stage for the new trains, They were not ready at the time, and they've since rectified that with the view that when local manufacturing activities, they will be ready for that. I'm encouraged for that matter, and I'm sure when those opportunities now emerge again, they will be ready to take that up, which I think will be a good thing. Which then brings me to this point of Siyahamba. Now, I'm using Siyahamba because... Oh, is it? Okay. All right. Okay. I'll do Siyahamba and I'll do another slide and then close. Now, the Siyahamba thing, the company which is 100% black-owned company, South African for that matter, Whiteville, it did what you call the welding work. Now, the truth of the matter is that now and then you get told that we are capable, we have the capacity, we can do this thing. The reality of it, if you look at, for instance, the trains that Prasa we are buying today, it's completely opposite to what we have bought in the 50s, right? And therefore, we are not lowering the standard. In fact, the standard is in tenfold now. So we expect our local companies actually to improve in the way they are done, they've been doing their business as well. Now, Siyahamba is a very good example of that, of working together where they worked hand in hand with Gibela. Within 6 months, their compliance levels reached about 87%, where in fact they even reached a local welding standard to a European standard, which that's basically what you want, where not only Siyahamba should be sufficient for South African markets, should be sufficient for other markets. And as I always say that, you know, it's pointless to create an industry that only survives because Prasa is there. You can't have that. I don't call that an industry, in my view. I say the industry, the one that thrives, is the one that even if Prasa closes doors tomorrow, it will still find its way in other markets as well. So the Siyahamba... it was a very good example of when supply development actually works in this instance. I'm going to skip this slide, but I'm just demonstrating some of the jobs because our responsibility was that not only with the what you call business, but also a lot of jobs that have now been created. We've seen that they've now reached over 1,000 as well. Now, those possibilities didn't exist pre-2014. You're encouraged every time. I mean, it will be nice to go to the factory site and see those young men and women that are working on the site. But most importantly, we have seen learnership programs that have been given, about 450 that have been schools around the Nigel area that have been targeted for maths and science, 180 bazaaries for young artisans in the mechanical and electrical bazaar schemes have been awarded to them as part of this particular program. So it's all around a package, at least from where we sit. Now, because of time, let me see here which one I can play with. Let me play with these last two. We still have some bit of shortcomings now, and I want to raise this because companies now and then, they do come to us and say, we have better technology in this and that, and we think we have capacity and capability to do it. The reality is that even if we like it, sometimes we like the idea, but we might not have the necessary capital to undertake that investment, right? And it's the reality of it, right? Or we like the idea, but even if we invest in that particular area, we cannot invest for too long because we just don't have the money to do it. So there is one constraint where, especially with institutions like ours, Prasa, because we are not really in the market to like borrowings and all of that. We rely purely on the fiscals. But the reality of it, where opportunities allows, which we have demonstrated with the Gibela deal, is that we can offer you a long-term investment certainty where that opportunity arises, and which we've done actually so. We have also demonstrated in terms of a refurbishment program, where since 2000 that program has been running. We signed this contract for not less than 5 years at any given time. So where we do have capital, We do offer that, but we are still very much constrained now and then, of course, with some of the capital. There is still also a bit of lack of insight, and I think we can spend a bit of time on this area going forward in terms of the capability and capacity of some of the companies as well. Now, this is what I did one or two tweaks in this slide, but in the main, I still want to reiterate these points which I've made in August last year, to then say, on economies of scale, I still maintain that we could do more between state-owned entities. I'm looking at the wills, for instance. You know, the wills manufacturing, if you say plus, how many do you need a year, how many do you need as Transnet, how many do you need as Gautrain, I'm sure that package will be slightly larger as opposed to Prasa going to the market on its own for a year, because these are typically some of the things that are obviously required. So that's one key point I still want to continuously reiterate.
You've been speaking now for 5 minutes, yeah, since I said three,
so I do need to
stop you.
All right.
I've just seen, as you brought up the whole issue of wheels,
yeah,
do you use, in the main, black industrialists to do this? Or do you, what sort of company are you really procuring your wheels from, if you procure your wheels? Presumably they need replacement at some point.
So that's the indirect one that we're doing with whenever we're taking the vehicles out. Let's say we give it to Transnet, we give it to Naledi and all of that. We expect them to come from Transnet in that instance. Sometimes if they don't, obviously they will then procure from somebody else.
You don't directly procure wheels per se. All right, well, we'll tackle that with Transnet per se. I was impressed with your internship program there, but the principle is great, but it's just too few, isn't it? I thought I read 22. Is that correct, or was it 122? Internship. So it's about 122 out of how many millions? Okay, right. But let us allow the chair to make a final comment. Yes.
Chair, can I just deal quickly with the issue of the invoices? Because it's an issue that was raised. Chair, the issue of the invoices requires some context. In the 2014-15 audit, the AG identified some of the ad hoc contracts, which include unique engineering, as being irregular. So then that followed a investigation, and the issues of delays could have been as a consequence of that. But to date, the last invoice that we had, which is 113, was submitted by Unique in December, and yes, it was submitted, and the payment was done in February. We have now an invoice of 313,000, which is dated February, and in terms of our payment cycles, we allow 30 days for the invoice to be paid, so it will be paid. But I have taken an opportunity, Chair, to discuss with Mr. Loiso Mangena that issues of invoices can't be issues of policy. We can't come to Parliament and discuss issues of invoices, and we must have a mechanism of how we deal with these issues.
In one sense, it is a policy. Government, President Zuma, President Mbeki before him, and perhaps somebody else even before him, President Kalima and between the two of them, have all made a point in the House to say that government must pay within a requisite time. Some have been gone out to give days and to talk about 60 days, and that no developing company, emerging company or whatever, we would now say black industrialist company, should be paid. I don't think you've ever seen a policy that talks about 2 years. Now, I agree, if it's irregular, you have a problem. But irregular usually means it's the SOE, or government department, is government rather than the supplier who has adopted an irregular process. Is that correct?
Sure, that is correct. And I don't mean to say the issue is not a policy issue. I'm saying the mechanism of how we engage as companies from a pure business point of view is that there is mechanisms of engaging the company so that we do not waste Parliament's time where Parliament has to deal with policy issues in the broader scheme of things.
No, I thank you for that understanding, but as far as I'm concerned, I'm not going to allow any company to go under because invoices aren't paid. That will not be allowed by Parliament, because you are undermining policy then if a black industrialist goes under. And so we're not saying that that is what you are doing, but it contributes to that. So I hope that the necessary mechanisms to address irregular processes are, you know, you've got them in hand and that they are being implemented so that we don't have this report again, because a small company cannot survive with that. Anglo-American can, and the bigger engineering companies, not a small industrialist, please. So that is a policy matter, because it involves a serious policy matter of black industrialists. And I, for one, won't let that pass. Another committee may, not this committee. All right? Members?
The last one, Chair,
yes.
I take your point. The direct question was asked of Unique Engineering whether they have provided the copper theft solution to us, and I thought that the response was given in varied terms that they are still to come, but I want to make the point that we are yet to receive any engagement with Unique Engineering in that regard. Thanks, Chair.
Now, I must thank you as well, and that is why we want both sides to be here, because sometimes things may be exaggerated from one partner, but when you're both here, they tend to be modified. So thank you very much. And now we've got, is it anyone else? Just, we've got Transnet to come in. Have we got the copy? All right, so we'll have to take Eskom. I'm not sure where the glitch came about, Transnet, but we won't debate that. But thank you very much to Prasa, to Mr. Zide, as well as Mr. Sabola. We now have Eskom. Is it Mr. Babalani, Mr. Koza, and Mr. Ms. Kasana? Is it Ms. Kasana? The acting chair is Mr. Skosana, is it? Is that right? Who's the acting chairperson? All right. Thank you very much. So we're sorry that it's just come a little bit out of kilter, but you know, at one point some members were saying on my left that they wanted a detailed response about Eskom. Who was saying that in the committee? Was it yourself, Honourable Mantash? When questions were being raised, you said you hoped we would get a detailed response. Is that right? Now, you've been here listening to what our, those of the companies we visited, they hear again, especially the ones that raise serious issues. Please try to address the issues that have been raised while they are here and we are here as well. Will you try and do that? Now, we don't want to go down the history of Eskom from when it started and so on. I think we're quite well familiar. Try and address current issues. Thank you.
Morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable members of the committee. Let me assure you as a committee to say we do our best to ensure that our procurement processes do take into account the black industrialists and the Black Economic Empowerment. And in our response, we're going to be able to give you the review of the current year highlights, and we're going to give you a preview plans of incorporate what is in our incorporate plan for 5 years. And we also respond, we're going to respond to the question related to the Naledi Foundry contract, which was raised by the portfolio committee. The unique engineering is, we don't do with the business with them, so we won't give any response on that one. Thank you. Mabalane will take us through on the detailed response.
Yes, Mr. Mabalane, I see is it CPO here or is it CFO? Ah, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members and colleagues. We have prepared quite detailed responses in terms of what has been raised in the report you just forwarded to us. So I'll probably spend most of my time there. But before that, maybe I'll go through the first slide, which really talks around Eskom's achievement in the past 5 years. I don't know if we do we drive the presentation ourselves. This is just a historical performance. I'm not going to spend too much time on it. Where we're coming from, it's a 5-year window, and I would really go to the next slide. The next slide is just an indication of some of the transactions which have concluded with large black industrialists. It is contract value. Some of the contracts have since been concluded in terms of fully supplied, and some are new, like you've seen a lady up there, which is a new contract. The 5-year contract is in its fourth month. Go to the next slide. The next slide really is just a response to radical economic transformation. It is still very much in draft. That's what we have put together over the past 4 months in terms of who we want to see ourselves over the next 5 years. And I will not really get into those details. We can do so if members have questions. And the next slide really is what we're here to talk about. It is concerns raised by Portfolio Committee regarding Naledi. Naledi has given an overview in terms of where we're coming from with and where we are currently. However, in the report, there are these three issues which have been raised that we thought we should respond to in detail. The first issue raised was the issue of internal delays with the conclusion of the contract. The second issue being the limited assistance to address capital challenges, and we assume that there is assistance from Eskom. And the third issue was the issue of attempts to discourage the supplier based on perceived poor quality. I think the exact statement says that the stations were sabotaging the supplier. So we'll give feedback around those three items. On the first issue of delays in contract conclusions, confirm that the statement is correct. The word delays. The approval to place the contract was given by the BTC, which is chaired by the board member on my left, was given in July. Then we went into protracted negotiations, which indeed, if you look at when the tender was issued to where we were at the time, you would expect that the suppliers were getting quite anxious around ability to start some supplying. But we concluded those discussions in September, and in November, we signed the last six signatures were obtained. But during the time, between the time that we had agreed on all substantive issues, we started giving up, giving in orders using the limited access or the letter of acceptance. And those are the orders which we gave at the time. Between the time that we got the approval to place the contract and the time that the contract was signed. So although there were delays, but the supply was not prejudiced as such, if that was the issue. In terms of the second issue of limited assistance to address working capital, we did what we could as a procurer. We participated at the invitation of the supplier in discussions which he had with the funders. We adjusted delivery schedules to allow the supplier opportunity to recover in terms of investment in plant, in training, and in development. And to that extent, although there were delays in terms of supplier, obviously because he was still acquiring the required equipment, we never cancelled any order. Firstly. Secondly, we never revised any order downward, which means we never really take it away from him. The orders which Naledi got is the orders that he is supplying and which we are expecting him to supply. So although there were issues, but there was never a prejudice if you look at it, if you want to look at it from that point of view. In terms of the last issue around attempt to discredit the supplier, I think he has stated it. There were challenges with some of the deliveries. We did return some of the material which was supplied because of quality issues. The picture you see on the screen, just an indication of where those problems came from. We intervened, had discussions with them and with the end users, which are the power stations, and we agreed on remedial actions. One thing which we agreed that we would do was to get involved in the quality control process with the supplier so that when the material leaves site, it meets the requirement and there is no double cost of having to double handle in terms of bringing the material to site and sending it back to source. And those quality interventions were agreed to the supplier. They are currently in execution, and I emphasize again, there has not been any orders which has been cancelled as a result. He continues to supply what we require. Where there is issues around capacity of specific material, he has requested that he subcontract, and we have agreed to it. As we speak now, we are going jointly with him in the next 2 weeks to pre-qualify the suppliers which he has chosen to assist where he needs assistance. Chair, that is probably in the main in terms of responding to the three issues which were raised by the committee.
I'm just looking at this and wondering if where's Naledi around here? Are you looking at some of the photographs I'm looking at that I've just Eskim have referred to?
Yes, Madam Chairman.
Have you seen these before?
We have seen them in quite some detail. It was an isolated incident in one of the early deliveries where we had...
Oh, don't use the long point. You have seen them, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. So, Eskim, have you completed, sir?
Yeah, Chair, the committee raised three issues, and yes. Those are the issues that we prepared to give responses to.
Yes, because I think one of the issues that was raised by the lady is that they spoke about the limited assistance and so on and so forth, and it appeared to the committee at the time in hearing this that Eskim would have, you know, appeared to be delaying some of these orders. But is this the only order that was delayed that you're showing us was not up to the standard?
Yeah, I am just showing you some. The picture shows the quality problems which we experience. Yes, as an example, which led to some of the orders being delayed because we returned the material which was supplied and were not meeting the quality requirements. And they subsequently resupplied them. They took back the bad quality material, reworked them and sent them to us in a state that we could use them.
Thank you. All right, let me allow members just to engage on this quickly. And the reason we're doing this, I'd hoped to do all three together, but we're still waiting for Transnet's the correct overheads to arrive. So let me take you first, Honourable Mantashe, because you referred to this right at the beginning. I'll then take yourself, Honourable Kurnoff, followed by the Honourable MacPherson, Honourable Nkongi, and as you see, the member who just filled in for me as chair is there at the back, Honourable Van Schalkwyk. Thank you. In that order.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I appreciate the response by ESCOM, but I have one question which is general, not specific to the Naledi. I just want to understand how they operate, because there's a huge cry out there in the country that says you award people contracts, 5-year contracts, and that term of those contracts are now midway, around 3 years old. But we have never offered those people business. How does that happen?
Thank you, Chairperson. A specific question towards Praza. I want to know whether you are using so-called third parties, or what can we call it, runners, I don't know, but do you, if you put out a tender, do you award a tender to somebody who can clearly not manufacture what you've tendered, what your tender is asking for? So, for instance, somebody wins the tender, they go to Pamotzi and say, you know, we won this tender, but can you do the job for us? If that is a practice of PRASA, I want to know why. If it's not, why is Pamotzi then complaining about it?
Very fair question. Honourable McPherson.
Thank you very much. Chair, I just want us to get a firm commitment or a way forward from yourself on when are we going to finalise the verification of local content. Because I don't really have a fixed date from Transnet. I don't have a fixed date from SABS, and we just keep talking about it. And I want that fixed date. When am I going to be able to get the local content statistics for the locomotives? Secondly, what I would like, Chair, and I'd like you to support me on this, I'd like a list of all outstanding payments to contractors or businesses more than 30 days from Transnet, PRASA, and Eskom. And I want to see what those dates are outstanding and what the amounts are outstanding and for what services they are outstanding. And I'd like that, you know, by the time we come back, which is the 28th of April.
With the two committee secretaries here, plus, of course, our program, I think we have just distributed that at the beginning of the meeting. Did you see the next term's program? And I still want to address that before we close today. But I had raised this issue with Mr. Hermans myself because, as some of you are aware, that we ATC'd on the 13th of October in 2016, and I still managed to get that report here. The issues around local procurement, you know, we had a colloquium report on local public procurement and its linkages to our industrialization drive, because we identified that as one of the impediments. This, and one of the issues that's loomed large in this report was the localization and procurement issue and designation. And we learnt during that colloquium that people tendering, companies, small, big, you name it, they would claim to have 60 or 70% local products or use of them, or even 54. And perhaps they would win the tender on that basis. Only when they had won the tender, the verification was then done by the other company to learn they had 30 or less. And companies who'd lost the tender had more. And the issue came up, but it's the cost of verification of this. That, you know, you don't know if you're going to win the tender, you're a medium company or maybe a small, and you go ahead with this, you spend a fortune, and then you don't win. So one of the recommendations, which is what I was looking for here, was that the Minister of Trade and Industry should consult the relevant ministries on the verification process so as to ensure that all departments that procure designated products adhere to local procurement and verification and requirements. The cost of it we put forward in another recommendation, and that was an engagement that the minister should have with finance on the status of the review and consequent amendments, because we were told the triple PFA were going to be, you know, amended in the regulations so as to ensure the participation of DTI in the process and to explicitly reflect who bears the cost of verification. And then there would be serious consequences for non-compliance, because one of the proposals that was made was that small companies, it would cost too much for them, and that this cost should be borne by the state. And someone said, you know, the state pays anyway, the public sector, because if you accept the winning tender, they've already built in the costs of verification anyway. So either you pay it as a separate item, or you're paying it anyway as part of the tender. Now, with respect to this, we had said that once we had conducted the oversight, I'm just refreshing everyone's memory, not only your own, Honourable Macpherson, that arising from this, because we needed to do this as well, we would then identify a date. And at that time, we were looking at the first 6 months of the year. As you know, we have not done the legislation that we thought we would do in February and March, because we are still awaiting it. So we are going to look at the program, and we are going to identify when we should pick this up again, but I don't think it would be suitable for us to pick it up before the amendments to the triple PFA. Is that not correct? And I'm sure you'll address that when you come on board a DDGs from trade and industry.
They're representatives of the National Treasury here, and so they would be best placed to give you an update on the amendments to the regulations of the triple PFA and the amended bill process, the Act. So they're two parallel processes. The regulations have already been amended, and the National Treasury is in the process of amending the Act. And
well, not National Treasury. Is that Mr. Willie Matabule, Office of the Chief Procurement Officer? I see you're here and you'll come after lunch sometime. Whereabouts are you? Oh, on the left. Yeah, I thought you were one of our new members anyway. Look, okay. You know, Honourable Macpherson.
Thanks, Chair. I think you've set out the process to, you know, formalising what we've been discussing for a long time, and that's really appreciated, and I think that that's going to go a long way. But my point of questioning is that the Transnet tender was worth 50 billion rand. We still have no idea what local procurement has gone on in terms of, I just want us to, because they're not going to give me a date, because they haven't given us a date since last year, and they're not going to give us a date today.
No.
Don't assume. Can we, should they not tell us when they will give us those local content, verified local content certificates? Can we then impose a date to say, this is when we want it by?
You see, you put me in a difficult procedural position. We haven't had their presentation, as you know. So let's focus on the two we have. I indicated that it's a little out of kilter, but let's not waste time. So let's just focus on PRASA and Eskom for the moment. All right? You had your, was it Honourable Kurnoff? It's now Honourable Mkongi.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. You know, number of SOEs here, they told us about billions that they have put in terms of the pillars for transformation. You spoke about localization, skills development, investment, women, rural, and so forth. But we don't get a breakdown of these things. To say in Mkanduli, who have done this and this, and these are the people. I'm raising these issues because we are dealing with a serious matter of fronting. In your own criteria in terms of tendering, are you putting this as an issue in terms of the transformation of the power relations within a company that is tendering to you, where you'll find that black people and Africans in particular, they just, you know, role-playing in number of things, or are just an entity that must spice the bigger entity that is white-owned. Do you make that criteria in terms of your tendering process to make sure that you are also assisting the country to achieve its national goal of radical socio-economic transformation and the PEE? It could be a general question. It can go also even to Transnet when they are reporting, because to me that is what is fundamental on this matter. The second one is the issue of this indirect procurement process. If PRASA gives that to an outside entity to do the job and then they are able to coordinate, who monitors that process? I will call them, with the layman language, subcontracting, because there's a big company with skills of subcontracting. Who monitors the relations in the process of subcontracting? Because if that person has a capacity to do so, can't Transnet that you are giving him this work do that on their own? Because you are hearing here that people who are busy in business, they are saying that that process is complex and is making them not to be able to do the job. It is easier for them for a direct procurement process. But why do you insist on that complex process that people are talking? Now, you spoke about general overhaul in the existing fleet, and you did not complete the transition process of these companies that are doing the existing fleet. What is the plan for the transition? You know, do they have those skills today? And then is it easy when we start this process that they can just go and do the job as you said they are going to do? Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Mkhongi. Honorable Skolbeck.
Thank you, Chairperson. My other questions has been attended to. I'm looking at ESCOM, and specifically with regards to the additional measures that you said you that to support Naledi in meeting contract delivery requirements. My concern is surely there are costs involved, because there's a lot of measures that you've put in place to ensure that quality products should be delivered. So I would like to know if that additional measures in any instance affected the original contract, or who's bearing the cost of those measures that's been put in place. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Van Schalkwyk. Yes, I think that is important, and I may propose to PRASA, and probably I'll say the same thing to yourselves, Transnet, and that is, it would be very, very useful if, when you do have these projections in place, you would share them with us, because here are your suppliers, some of them, in this room. And black industrialization largely falls under trade and industry. So please try and keep in touch with us, and don't let us have to call you back to try and glean, you know, the information. I would also like to know, I think it's yourselves with Gabela, is it, am I right, and who else is it? You have an arrangement, and I know there was some issue around Gabela and China Rail. Is it China Rail per se that was there? No, it was a China Rail with PRASA on its own, Gabela. But I know that there is what I would call sometimes an unholy alliance somewhere here, and it's very difficult for me to work out where the problem is. Does China Rail, for example, operate under a different dispensation? I imagine they do, because it's an external company. And then how does that interface with the work and the relationships that you are developing with current suppliers here, especially when you project things forward as we're trying to transform our country, and that includes the supply chain being more localized, as you know. Fine. With Eskom then, I think the questions have been put to you, and if some of these questions, some of you need to come back in greater detail in writing, that's fine as well. But we would have a deadline, and that would be in a few days. That's next week, before Easter, you understand. All right, so over to both Eskom, as well as Prasa, is it down there, as well as Smith. Did we address some of the issues around Smith for you, with Prasa and with Eskom, with Smith, Smith Capital? Yeah, that's right. So you don't have any issues around there. All right, well, please go ahead and address that then.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Maybe to address the two questions which were asked directly in terms of, then maybe we can talk about the other issues that covers everybody. We have probably two types of contracts which we go out on a long-term basis. So the first type is a straight supply or, you know, services with a specific supplier where we expect execution to happen immediately and we pay as execution occurs. I also have got a group of contracts which I think the honorable member is talking about where we establish panels. We've got about four or five main panels. I mean, the electrification is one that is probably known the most, where we go and contract on terms and condition with a number of suppliers, up to 400. And during the execution work, then we give contracts according to how the individual suppliers were assessed to have capabilities on. On the electrification, you will have people who are assessed to be able to do the designs. And once the designs are done, normally you would find that there is quite a bit of time left between one type of design and the next type. Then you've got those who are actually doing the execution, which is planting poles and pulling cables, etc. So the intention is that we are able to see who is capable of doing what. But unfortunately for us to be able to go into a short-term period of contracting, we do sign contract with all of them. Like I say, only electrification is more than 400. But you find that the work which we have require about 70. So you then have quite a number of them who would have contracts but will not be called upon because of the fact that their capabilities are either not required at the time or it is oversubscribed. You've got enough people who are executing the work at the time. We are reviewing our approach to it. To say that maybe we should introduce a rotation mechanism and contract with less. So you would really go and not, instead of contracting with 400, you'll contract with 70 and then make sure that you can rotate the work among them, because the size of work really will determine what you, the extent to which you can rotate. So I think that covers it. But obviously, I mean, we need to be improving. So this is part of an engagement to say that if there are specific people that would like to engage in terms of saying that, hey, we believe that we actually have capabilities which are given to only a few and we're not given an opportunity, I'll be happy to look into it and then further engage if another Mantasha can provide the work. In terms of fronting, I think we do specifically contract in a manner that we can circumvent people that are attempting to confront. There are two ways where people win contracts and then subcontract almost the majority of the work out to another person who is not transformed. So you've got the transformed company that when you contract, you're thinking you that you're contracting with a transformed sub-supplier, only to find that majority of the work is undertaken by a supplier that is not transformed or even not local. So there is a restriction on our orders that suppliers may not contract more than 30% of their work to outside. If they do, then they have to get written permission to do so. We try to monitor that. I don't think we're monitoring it as closely as we should. The other fronting comes in is where the role players are different from the people that come to deliver and negotiate contract. Where you find that it is a supplier who is purported to be owned by Edwin Mabelane, but in the meantime it is owned by a foreign national in completeness, and Edwin Mabelane just plays a PR role, has got no role in the business. There, during contracting, we do ask the organizational structure and the delegated authorities in terms of specifically of the banking account of the supplier as a first thing. But the second thing which we do is that we do visit supplier premises, especially where they are supplying into level one, as Nalindo was indicating to you, that we become very strict in terms of making sure that people who supply us with level one equipment, which is equipment that is critical to the operations of Eskom, either it be at the power station, transmission and distribution, those suppliers are visited physically to make sure that we understand who are the role players within the company itself, who we have to interact with in any way during the execution of the contract. And then in terms of the direct cost on the additional measures which was raised, currently it is minimal. From the contract itself, we've not varied it, nothing else has changed. I think the supplier is picking up additional costs because of some misunderstanding with their quality expectations. But it has not come back in terms of us paying additional cost. The resources which we are deploying now to support the quality process in his premises are all in-house resources, including the AIAs. So we're not incurring directly additional cost. There is obviously a fact that people now must travel regularly to the premises of the suppliers, but there's no significant additional cost in terms of the support measures. Okay, in terms of indirect procurement, upfront we do require that to be visible, but we do not engage a lot in indirect procurement. Where subcontracting is required, we make sure that it is done upfront, and it's very simple. I don't think it's complicated. DPE has taken away our claim to what we call second tier. At that time, it was complicated it because it meant that the subcontracted values were reporting them as Eskom expenses. That has fallen away, so we're not really getting engaged into complicated arrangements with subcontracting at the moment.
Thank you very much for that from Eskom. And I'm looking at Naledi. Where are you? You've heard the responses, haven't you? And so I hope that assists you in some way. Thank you very much. We also, is it Prasi here, been asked a few questions and a few comments?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me just start with the, we don't have any relationship with China Rail, be it south or north, at least in our domain at PRASA. We can't seem to find any of the relationship. The issue with regard to the GO contractors, the transitional process, Honorable Ngonki, we do have a transitional plan. What we started doing with the current suppliers, the seven that one referred to,
was that for the yellow and grey trains that we are salvaging, so these are the vehicles that we're thinking they can still run for 10 to about 15 years before we can obviously decommission them for other things. We then said we will need to start bringing sort of modern technologies that comes in it. As much as, you know, the technology that is based there is a 1950 base, we then want to then bring some newer technology, and we see how they start responding to that as part of our migrating them into taking full responsibility for the new sets completely. So that's the plan. Now, with the contract we have, which runs until 2019, we are sticking with the program with the view of introducing those modern components within the country. And here we're talking like propulsion, your traction motors specifically, so that these seven contract companies, they can start giving us that. Because these are typically the propulsion and traction motors that we're going to be using on the new rolling stock, which will give us another 50 years or 55 years kind of a design lifespan. Where it becomes trickier, the discussion hasn't been that easy, is that what it means, though, in the workshop, something ought to change in their workshop, the way they've tooled themselves, the upskilling and all of them, because now you're having to take up a newer way of, or you're taking a newer responsibility than what you're used to. So your employees that are working in a workshop are so used to working on a traction motor that is based on a 1950 technology. Now, in 2017, you're saying, well, I need a new one. So there's a upskilling which has got a cost that relates to it. So we are looking at potential in terms of, from an enterprise development, how we can also assist with that process so that it doesn't become a problem later on when we, in 2 years' time, when we're putting a new program in place that has got all these modern technologies that comes with it. So that's the plan that we have actually put in place with them right now. This issue of subcontracting, currently what we have done is that we started introducing Southern Bureau of Standard about 2 years ago, where we signed a deal with Southern Bureau of Standard to now start auditing and verifying the relationship that exists, not only with the guy that you signed directly with, also that the subcontracting companies that the business gets done with. So we do have a contract with in that instance, as CRASA. And in this area specifically, you're right, which is what I've been saying, and that's what also contractors raised to say, well, to some extent, we believe we can supply this particular thing, especially on the critical components, where they say, but we can supply this thing directly. We don't have to supply to these what sort of first-tier companies. We can actually do that, and probably can lower the cost of doing business. So we have asked our engineering team to look at that with the possibility of starting to procure some of these things directly so that we can also lower the cost of doing business. Even if we do buy them and then make them available for those that need to, let's say, rehabilitate the train, and let it be so. What I think we cannot sustain is what is on the table that says, well, you subcontract and then you end up paying three times what you would have initially paid in any case. You raised the issue about, is it our policy to have this third party or middleman? Absolutely not. And you will have seen, I mean, this is a matter of record, that at CRASA, that's something that we must get rid of. It's not allowed. Fronting is a punishable offense in any case. Our policy is very clear. You do not get a contract and you contract the majority of your work to somebody else. It's fronting. It's defined as fronting within our statute. And should you be found, and I'm sure we'll, after this meeting, we'll ask for some of these details. If there are any of those things that do exist, we will need to, as part of the investigation that is currently underway, I'm sure we'll pick up on some of those things. I think those were the five. I'm not so sure if we may have missed one, or but I think these are the ones.
Just before Prasa leaves that one, you know, throughout our report, and I certainly did not go everywhere. I had a personal constraint that had to be addressed immediately with a member of my family. So I didn't go there. So I actually studied the report as my only terms of reference of the oversight. And so when I see things like Transnet that we're going to come to, and you yourself saying about the wheels, you have a certain relationship with Transnet, etc., and the supply. And then I see issues like the Transnet locomotive renewal program, PRASA and Gibella renewal, and existing business with PRASA. And then I come to the next part of the report indicating in terms of the PRASA Gibella renewal program. I don't know why it would refer to it like that. You know, there's absolutely no relationship, you see. It estimated the market share to be XYZ, and then it refers to the OAOEMs that PRASA was having a problem with, and that PRASA indicated that this is largely related to the technical challenges that Transnet is experiencing. Now, do you understand about the unholy alliance here? Because everything seems to depend on someone else, although PRASA's name is mentioned. If you refer to the report that I handed out to you this morning, you'll see it there under 8.2, under implementation for two pages. And if there's something in this report, and it's been ATC'd, which means it's been a public document, since when? It must have been at least 2 months, isn't it? Pardon? No, this is not since October. It's February this year, 2017. But we're now, you know, towards the end of March, and you don't look at the documents that your name is all over in Parliament. I find that strange. So, you know, if we have misprinted and misreported something with your name in, you should be alerting us this morning. Don't you think so? You should be alerting us so that we're clear, you know, and that we can say, right, I'm sorry, this is a mistake, and we correct it. But this is in the public domain. So I would advise PRASA to make a study of these things. Parliament doesn't publish a report for nothing, especially an oversight report. It's meant to be taken seriously. Now, I don't expect you to clear it up now, because you clearly never studied the report at all. So I suggest you study it. It's publicly accessible. And then come back to us in writing so that we reach a clearer understanding of this relationship. So I don't need a response, but I need a written response which will be factored into the report we write after this meeting. But what we do need to do now, with due respect to everyone, but I need to look at my members first to ensure that their questions were responded to, and then to thank Eskom, to thank PRASA, and to also ask Transnet now to come forward again. And may I suggest, now that we've got this in front of us, you gave us a mini background with Africa, which we all had, and one or two other things. So perhaps hit right to the, you know, crux of the issue then, Mr. Thomas. Thank you. So let us deal with that now. Mr. Thomas, thank you very much. The group chief supply. I know it really puts one off when, you know, you sort of jump up in the middle because people aren't following you. So I apologize if there was any communication breakdown on the committee part. Wherever the breakdown, if it was on your part, I'm sure all of the apologies are noted. Please go straight ahead.
I'm hustling too.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm going to move forward as the Chair requested to go into... I just want to touch base on the localization, industrialization and black industries program. And obviously the locomotive program feeds into it. And obviously the black industrialist program has been factored into our strategies. And we do work to ensure that we can work on the areas of concern around black industrialization regarding access to finance, access to market, skills development, and transfer standards, quality and productivity improvement, which supports the black companies to become industrialists. So in terms of our black industries program, we're focusing on the rail manufacturing sector, which would be the locomotive build program, as well as the manufacturing supply of rails, rail infrastructure, subcomponents, on-track machines, and then in our advanced manufacturing environment, the other rolling stock components. Another area also where we are making moving forward is in the blue ocean economy, including vessel building and repair, where we have developed local companies to be building our tugboats as well as some of our dredges. On the 1064 program, obviously the transaction was awarded 3 years ago to four OEMs, which was Bombardier, General Electric, China North Rail and China South Rail. To date, 185 locos have been delivered by General Electric and China North Rail, who are based in the manufacturing facility in Pretoria and Kuruspoort. The other two manufacturers who are going to be based in Durban have started the production. The manufacturing facilities are being finalized. Two locomotives have been handed over for type testing, and that is nearing the completion of the stage regarding the type testing. Bombardier will be manufacturing all the locomotives locally in South Africa, where for the type testing, some of the prototypes were manufactured overseas and brought in. On the supply development commitments, we are currently at 25.9% of the delivery of the supply development, which includes industrialization, small business promotion, creating of capacity and capability. And the supply development is ahead of the delivery of the locomotives. In terms of the delivery of locomotives, we are sitting at about 17% of the locos have been delivered, and our supply development is standing at 25%. In terms of the initial review...
You know, Mr. Thomas, they say something goes wrong in every set of public hearings. It's gone wrong here, that's for sure. It's not the right one. I don't know how many of these were on the stick, but the reality is I now can see what's going on, but none of my members.
Chair, the members can have a look at their previous handout that they had. The slides I'm talking to are on the original handout that they had.
But so you see, you didn't tell us that, and we went and focused that in the slides you were reading from.
Yes, the slides I was reading from had additional content in it.
Well, now, if you had told us what you've just said, you could have saved us 2 minutes. I don't appreciate that, Mr. Thomas, please. Thank you. We also wasted paper, and I understand, the cost of a couple of trees or something. Right. Next time you come before Parliament and you decide, look, okay, so that they've got the wrong one, we ask for a new one, you then go back to the other one, tell us. Perhaps you don't do that where you come from. Do it here in Parliament. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Members, did you understand what has happened now with Mr. Thomas?
After we focused as to what he was reading from, he now asks us to use the original one. You've handed it back. Where are these documents? Tell Hurry on, we don't have time. You've cost us a lot of time.
Thank you very much,
Chair. Yeah, it probably sounds like a joke to the public sector. It's not. It's not a joke to waste money or resources of Parliament. It is far from a joke. It's a serious matter. Aren't you aware of fruitless expenditure? Clearly not. Clearly not. Move ahead, Mr. Thomas.
Thank you very much, Chair. The OEMs, in terms of the localization program, are utilizing a number of local companies in South Africa. General Electric has a total number of 17 local companies that they are utilizing. Bombardier's 18. CNR and CSR have 27 each. As you can see in terms of the visual in front of you, for the locomotives, we've identified and highlighted the items in red where they are designated into sectors regarding requiring local content. And you can see that also further items are being localized by the OEMs. So the locomotive in front of us is one of the electric locomotives. We can see we've got quite a number of items there that are designated and localized. On the diesel locomotive here, also we've identified the suppliers of the designated sectors as well as the suppliers of components that haven't been designated but are being localized. The next depiction is also of the second electric locomotive, as well as with the identification of the companies, the local companies, and the designated items. And then also on the diesel locomotives, where we've identified what is local and what is designated. Also, Transnet is in its rail tender, which we are currently in the process of evaluating. The tender was aimed at attracting black industrialists. We went to market for a 15-year contract to enable a supplier to be able to build a local rail rolling mill in South Africa. Also, in terms of our strategy around on-track machines, we also feel it is going to be done to encourage the development of black owner players in the rail sector. Chair, regarding the other rolling stock components, I'm going to hand over to Mr. Ali Chabalala, the CPO of Transnet Advanced Manufacturing, who will also then be able to discuss some of the items regarding the Naledi and the wheels.
Thanks, Chair, and good afternoon to the members and everyone attending. Transnet Engineering is an advanced manufacturing arm of Transnet, maintains and refurbishes rolling stock. And in this slide, Chair, we highlighting some of the suppliers that we use for various rolling stock components, the likes of SCO, and we also indicating the ownership in terms of black ownership and black women ownership of these suppliers. And in the next slide, we want to go into the details of the localization and supply development within a Transnet engineering environment, where we're saying that in 2012-2013, the Department of Trade and Industry issued an instruction note on local content. And in support of the Transnet went out to the market with a number of high-value tenders that required local companies or any interested party to supply components and gave specific times for those companies to localize. And those items included the bearings, the axles, couplers, wheels, and etc. So there was a number of them. And what we did, Chair, we went with long-term contracts, which was about 5-year contracts with an option to extend for a further 2 years for most of these tenders. That was to allow the local industry an opportunity to have a bankable project Because if you have to invest in a plant, you needed to have a long-term contract. And that's basically what Transnet did, and then we have awarded to several local companies. And in 2012, the economic conditions were completely different from what they are today. And based on that, we were able to project, based on the current economic condition that existed in the 2012-2013. And you will see from our presentation, we're showing there in red what those projections were, for example, for one of our biggest commodity, which is our wagon, wagon build. You'll see that the numbers were consistent between 30,000 units per year to over 4,000 units per year. And that, Chairperson, was in the heart of the rolling stock supply chain. So most of our suppliers in the rolling stock environment dependent on the build program that Transnet ran at the time. And since the awards of those tenders ranging from 2012-2013 to 2015-2016, you know, the delivery and the build program continued very close to what was initially projected, which was ranging from 2,100 to as high as just over 4,000 units per year. In 2016-2017, we only managed to build 100 units, which is the current financial year. So that sharp decline really hit the market hard and our supply chain seriously hard. Mainly economic condition. It's driven by demand for the volumes. Our sister division, when I say our sister division, I'm talking about Transnet Freight Rail, which is the operator. So Transnet Freight Rail as the operator, due to lower volumes from a requirement required by the customers, will require less rolling stock. And as a result, there will be less or no wagon built at all. So that is basically what has happened. And as a result, some of the contracts that we already had based on the current on the economic conditions that existed in the 2014-2015 financial years have been negatively impacted. And I mean, one of them is partially answering the Naledi issue, you know, who's the one of the wheel suppliers. From award, Naledi was awarded a contract in 2015. And since our Naledi as a new entrant had to develop a product to supply to Transnet. So our tender, as I said, gave suppliers an opportunity to develop products, and hence we gave a long-term contract for those contracts for those contracted parties to come and have an, a product that is tested and approved. As you can imagine, a wheel is what keeps a train on the track, and the testing protocol for a wheel is quite stringent. So Naledi managed to complete the testing in March 2016. So since award in 2015, so there's been a period where you couldn't place orders because you needed a company to be tested. And since award in 2016-2017, you can see what has happened. The demand never existed. And in the same space, we had two role players. Locally, SCORE has been supplying such wheel, which is a 34-inch wheel. And now we have a lady that is going to be in the space. And hence, Chair, that is really in answering the question on what really happened there on a lady. If you can move to the next slide. Our contracts, as you can imagine, it's because we don't have fixed commitment of volumes to move. Our contract becomes an as and when contract. It is demand driven. So the less the demand, the lower the demand, the lower our orders are going to be with our customers and so forth, with our suppliers. And outside TFR, Transnet still continues with an aggressive strategy to pursue business elsewhere in African continents and other regions. So we have a whole lot of tenders that we, or bids that we've submitted in other markets where we look for additional business opportunities. And then those, if Transnet wins them, will also contribute in driving the local supply chain. If we move to the next slide. Before we conclude, I would want to go back to the Pento.
Thank you slide.
The thank you slide. We want to address the issue on the Pento. The Pento Unique or Pamuzi. Okay. Pamuzi mentioned the issue of CSR Pento. Okay. Transnet Freight Rail went out on tender in 2015 on the Pento for local industry to participate in 2015. And a local company has been awarded a definitely not Pamuzi, but a local company has been awarded, and they have developed a prototype, and the TOFA prototype is in process now as we speak. In January 2017 has been put in for testing on a locomotive, and it might be tested for a period of time, after which it will be removed to see how it has performed during the period. And then after that period, when it's approved, obviously Transnet will follow a process now of ordering and starting to replace the current ones. The locomotive, as Mr. Edward Thomas has mentioned, they do come with their own traction motor, pentos, yes.
Address some of the points that have come up by the respective black industrialists and so on.
So to some extent, if you go just to the last slide, if we look at that slide, it summarizes some of the issues that are out there in the market. If you see some of the big suppliers, and I'm not sure if I'm allowed to mention names, but there are all big role players that we know are supporting Transnet. We know what is happening to SCOR. We know what is happening to SWASAP. So all of those suppliers that are part of our supply chain do indeed experience what Naledi mentioned, where there were no orders. And I think the key with what we're learning from the Naledi issue, if I listen to what Mr. Mapatiani was saying, came down to communication. And when they came, we painted the picture to them to say, what you're seeing in terms of lack of orders, it's not by choice, but it's mainly by design. In the industry where you participate, so most of our suppliers are very concentrated, meaning that they don't have a diversified customer base. So their over-reliance on Transnet means a drop like we have seen in 2016.
Now we've had it, we can see the drop, right, thanks. Members, do you wish to raise any questions or make any comments?
Chairperson, can I just say first, I think it was fair contribution and a very fair reply to Naledi. I'm looking towards Naledi. I hope they are more happy now, but I think it was a fair comment in terms of the slump in the economy.
The only sort of comment I have, but it's also a question, I was looking at the graphs here, the bar charts, and in 2015, 2016, in fact 2014, 2015, we get just a glimpse of where reality may be emerging, as it were. And if we didn't see it then, it became clearer in 2015, 2016. So what I can't understand, I know you've got actuaries there, you've got planners, statisticians, maths people who plan this. You know, anyone who's done that would have said to you in 2015, 2016, if they hadn't said it already at a board meeting, scale back, chaps, brief your suppliers. But it sounds like you never ever communicated this massive downturn to your suppliers. Just look at it. You see, Honorable Kornhoff, 2014-2015, all of us can see this. Now, isn't that the time where you say, look, you know, things don't look that good. We definitely know that the planned projections we made for 3 years are not going to come about unless some miracle globally or wherever. So, you know, we're certainly going to be looking down at cutting this down quite considerably. You may not be able to say by 50%, but by 2015, you know what's going on. But you should have known, 2014-2015, look at the economic data that was before all of us. We saw it there. And how did Transnet interpret this economic data? Who are your economists? See, this is the problem I am facing, because it's similar to what I was trying to convey yesterday about the poultry and European Union and that. You can't just come and dump. You know what you want to do? Engage with partners, engage with suppliers, and say, call them in. Especially, government's policy is black industrialists. Government's policy is BBBE. Bring in anyone who's in there. In fact, everyone in the country should be adhering to the BBBE code. So whoever these suppliers are, have a meeting with suppliers. You didn't do this clearly. That's what I'm saying. So yes, that is the criticism I have. It may not be of you two gentlemen directly, but it is of your entity, your state-owned enterprise. And you need to take this up, because that is what will be in the report, rest assured. So had you said this to those who had got these contracts, it may have given them the opportunity to talk with DTI to say, look, we're not going to be able to employ all these people. Maybe we ought to have this incentive in 3 or 4 tranches. Do you see? It enables people to plan. So really, I must say on a sober note, to Transnet, it's very disappointing what I'm hearing here, because you didn't learn this yesterday. You've known for some time. Now, I don't know what your projections look for 2018, 2017, 2018, but I'm going to ask to have a look at them in 3 months. But before you answer, because that was more an aside, I'm looking at what's in the report here. And it's what I said to Prasik, that they are part of this triangle. They come to you for certain things. And you are dealing with China Rail, or whatever, the OEMs. And it states here, and this may be perhaps quite an emotional response in this report that someone wrote, the level of engagements between OEMs and industry varies, resulting in vast mistrust. But when they say something like that, they're quoting. Vast mistrust between Transnet, OEMs, and local suppliers, with the potential to undermine the industrialization agenda. And further on, Prasa itself, and I quoted that bit from Prasa, actually talks about the technicalities here, that there are technical challenges, and it is these technical challenges of Transnet that are impacting on them. Yes, you do say that, Prasa. Yes. So, you know, the whole, I see you looking with surprise here. Perhaps what we ought to do next time is invite you to join us on this oversight, because people are very forthcoming to us. But we've chosen to bring you all together so that those who've made these comments are looking at you as you refute them or explain, and perhaps some of your explanations have gone a long way, let me be frank. It certainly sounds like it earlier. But the other thing is about the China whatever. and the Gubella, is it Gubella issue, which I read out earlier. I don't want to go through that again because you can study this at length. But it does refer to a technical challenge here. And we don't want to hear this again. We want to know that you've done more effective planning. Change your actuaries, change your economists. Try to get someone who's more realistic and engage with your suppliers. That would be what I would say to yourself. Because if your engagement with suppliers is anything like your engagement with us over this presentation, where one moment we've given the wrong one, the next moment you know we're going to print this, you heard us, this was not said under a table, you keep quiet, you give us another one, go back. And if that's how your communication works, sir, you've really got to go back and learn how to communicate. Because really, that was a disastrous approach. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. From the VTI, I'm not jumping the gun here for in preparation for the presentation that we will be making, but I'm not really happy or impressed with the answer from Transnet, especially around the issue on the pantograph.
Please give us an explanation.
I'll give you an example or an explanation. If we have, these electrical systems are designated in terms of the National Treasury Instruction Note. The OEMs that we are talking about that are delivering the electric locomotive is China and Bombardier. They have been in discussion with the DTI saying who can do this, who cannot do this. And we have advised in terms of what. So if anybody today is delivering the locomotives with a pantograph that has been imported and the DTI has not been informed, it's totally wrong. It's illegal. It's contravention of the instruction note, purely. So we have electrical locomotives that have been delivered to Transnet. As we speak, they have got the pantograph. Yes, they do have electrical locomotives.
Where are they being delivered?
The electric locomotive from China, on the electric locomotives, they have made it in their presentation, and they are delivering the electric locomotive assembled in Gurusport with a pantograph that has been imported.
Well, there we are. I'm not saying this. I'm not buying from Transnet, am I? Yes, Honorable Mkongi.
I think what the DTI is raising reinforces our report on this matter. Because on page 35, we have acknowledged this matter. We said Transnet's procurement strategy for rail has not been used effectively to ensure that all rail procurement contracts support the building of a robust local supply chain. We have been clear on this matter. We said Transnet procurement planning has not resulted in the consolidation of orders across a number of commodities in South Africa. We also said it appears based on trade statistics that imports are growing exponentially despite the prescribed minimum local content threshold. And it talks about the 1,064 locomotive, where the first one are from China, without local content, 6 from USA, and so forth. And these are the things that Parliament is talking about. And Transnet continue to ignore such issues.
Members of the committee, you know, I really would like you to look at this. We studied this report. It's not the first time we've looked at it. You were all there. You heard what suppliers were saying. And yet, it was only Honourable Kornhoff that, you know, initially opened up. Honourable Mantash?
What I want to check, Chairperson, is whether Transnet was giving us a wrong information deliberately on the matter raised by Comrade Mkongi.
That's quite a serious statement here. Can you respond, please?
Thank you, Chair. Transnet always provides the correct information that is available to it in terms of all the reporting that we do bring into any forums. Chair, as it relates to the local content, the mechanism that Transnet employed in terms of procuring the locomotives was for an OEM to come and provide the locomotives, but they need to comply with the local content legislation. Because it is legislated, the OEM needs to comply with it, and Transnet, on top of that, added our supply development commitments to extract value and ensure that we can grow the South African economy, support the South African rail sectors in terms of this. Unfortunately, and I think this is also mentioned by one or two of the honourable members, that when we procure, we cannot dictate who they need to use to manufacture, because the OEMs provide the guarantees and the warranties on the product. So the OEMs need to be the ones selecting the service providers, and the OEMs are the ones accountable to meet the local content. Transnet needs to provide the oversight, and the verification needs to be done through the DTI and SABS. And we work hard in terms of ensuring all of these items. We engaged with the OEMs. I know the OEMs engaged with DTI with the OEMs in identifying suppliers who can provide them the products. But obviously the final decision rests with the OEMs on that.
You know, sorry, Mr. Shabalala, if I can just come in before you here. It certainly sounds that we're going to get a list of OEMs you're working with. Get them in here, because you see, we are saying here that the level of engagements, and I've read this earlier, between OEMs and industry varies, resulting in vast mistrust between Transnet, OEMs and local suppliers. I read that earlier, but didn't seem to faze you when I read it. You didn't say no. That's absolutely incorrect. You didn't. You were very quiet on the Western Front, but let me speak to Mr. Shabalala, wanted to speak. Yes.
Thank you. I just want to add to my colleague on your question to say, is the answer from Transnet correct or honest? The answer is yes. We still correct and honest. When the locomotives are out of warranty,
out of it, sir.
When the locomotives are out of
Shabalala, let's leave honesty out of it. That's incredibly subjective.
Okay.
Let's leave factual correct.
No, factually correct. When the locomotives are out of warranty, when the locomotives are out of warranty, the Pinto supply becomes the responsibility of Transnet. And in preparation for the locomotives being out of warranty, Transnet has an obligation to have a complying Pinto, which is locally manufactured. And hence, we have started the process earlier to make sure that we develop a local supplier in that regard. And that is what where we're coming from.
Well, you know, members, if we want to take this seriously, because there are serious statements made here with respect to Transnet, then it's going to mean a further engagement in the new term and calling in OEMs as well, calling in everyone here involved, because we're not going to listen as if we're in a confessional while somebody says one thing to us, the next one coming to confess gives us another story, and so it goes on. And then we can't talk about it because it has the seal of the confession. No, no, no. Parliament's got no seal of confession. So what we're going to do, we're opening this up. Because I have got to understand, as chair of this committee, and so have members of the committee and Parliament, what is the challenge here? Exactly what is it? Because we are no wiser at this point. Is anyone here understanding the problem clearly? Because if you can understand it clearly, come here and tell us. Because this is smoke and mirrors at its very best. So what I want to do, you may in fact been like Parliament undermined Transnet, because you effectively undermined us a while ago. Now we may be undermining you, because the facts may not be on the table. So I'm going to insist we have another engagement in the next term. Members, We do want your agreement on that, Honorable Mkongi.
No, I want to support you, Chairperson, on the further engagement. Sorry. However, the Department of Public Enterprises is here, and they are learning what are the issues that are being raised here. So we'll also need an independent, I mean, presentation from the department on the intervention on these matters, especially the prototype, the question of local content, and so forth. What is their activity in terms of this particular question? Thank you.
We have somebody to second that we move on that, Honorable Mantash, Honorable Manskalfate. I think we should. So, because I have learned one thing in all the time being here, that perhaps we're getting half of the story from everyone. And we could, in fact, be demonizing the wrong person, as it were, or the wrong entity. So let's get down to the bottom. Let's get down to the facts. Because everyone sitting here has one goal. And that goal is to serve South Africa, create jobs through growing an inclusive economy. Isn't that so? That's our purpose. Right, Mr. Thomas?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, what I wanted to actually request is if Transnet can respond in writing to the statements on the report, because there are inconsistencies in the report which we would like to address.
We said that to all of you, and I think it gives you an opportunity quietly to address these issues. Please do so in writing if you want to expand on your responses. Is that clear to everyone? Now, thank you very much. We're going to have a very short lunch, because tonight's Friday night, you'll be able to relax. So it is now, on my watch, 10 to 1. Can we please be back at 5 past? Thank you. 5 past 1. 5 past 1. Yes.
I am a public school that I present in my program. Thank you. How they are going to, how they are going to.